Because she had always been on time, the foreman never so much as flinched at his forearm when she had to leave early. She's good labor. Not even a baby can make her late. 90 minutes later, I was born a month early. The lieutenant and my dad was proud that I was on time. Military time. For the last time. Growing up, I was always told time is not a suggestion, it's a fact. Non-negotiable, so I guess that's why I'm anti-punctual, because clocks make me feel like a hostage with the way that they're armed. Skin-flavored nightmares every day of me at half past black, public enemy number one, neck dangling from an oversized clock. This is the face of chronometrophobia. I am on CP time, New Mexican and Indian time, and frankly, it's sad that that's still not enough time. I can barely keep up time, and it's so sad I still need more. The leash given me by God, family, and friends alone. Never by appointment nor employer, except for the time when I was 415 Hakeem on my name tag and schedule at Eddie Bauer. But I was proud when their manager proposal began with, "He may not come when you want him, but he always shows up." I'm not the type to call out. I'm the type that's running behind. Chasing my dreams has me late for their reality. Chasing my future has me late for their now. So just know, when I show up a hair less dressed and stressed, it's simply because I haven't met my future yet. And when they say dumb shit like, "If you would have just left 10 minutes earlier, all the lights would have been green," I know exactly what they mean. But when they say dumb shit like, "If you would have left 10 minutes earlier, he's the type that would be late to his own funeral," I have no fucking idea what that means. Of course I want to be late to my own funeral. In fact, I'll be a no-show if I have any say in the matter. So what if I am too much heart, hemmed up to a surplus of sleeve, never cufflinked to but covering my forearm foreman, because I never know what time to leave. Plus, I already told you about my phobia of clocks. They just remind me that we're all running out of time. And I'm sorry I borrow a couple of your seconds to enjoy the ride. I'm sorry I try to love everybody at the same time, and I didn't prioritize your deadline over my lifeline. I mean no disrespect. And I don't mean to take your time, but I mean to take mine. When I'm late, I hear me ticking, knowing that when I leave, I would not have spent as much time with you as I would have liked. Just like the conversation I haven't seen in forever at the market, the "No, mom, this is not a bad time" on the phone, the "Yes, son, I have time for one more video game," the third snooze, the cuddle for breakfast, the best part of waking up is laying next to me in bed, the 5 more minutes won't hurt that made me late to this. Hi, I'm now 15 Hakeem. Pleased to meet you. And I'm sorry I'm not embarrassed or ashamed. In fact, I feel relieved, even though there certainly wasn't enough time to stop for bathroom or gas. I just drive 85 miles per hour from wherever I was to be in your presence. And I wish you were all arms and unconditional instead of frowns and perfection, because I am not God. But just like them folk in that old black church say about their God, he may not come when you want him, but he's on time.
And that was Hakeem Bellamy, Albuquerque's poet laureate, reading Chronometrophobia. I was a little nervous, to be honest, to pronounce that word, but I think I did okay. I was so lucky to be at an event where I got to hear this incredible musician, adventurer, poet, writer. Hakeem pretty much does it all. On his website, beyondpoetryinc.com, under the About section, Hakeem says, and I quote, "As the inaugural Poet Laureate of Albuquerque, New Mexico, Hakeem Bellamy is a national and regional Poetry Slam champion and holds 3 consecutive collegiate Poetry Slam titles at the University of New Mexico. Hakeem has been published in multiple places. He's also been named Best Poet in the Weekly Alibi's annual Best of Berkey poll every year since 2010. His first book, Swear, won the Tilly Olson Award for Creative Writing from the Working Class Studies Association. Hakeem has done so much, and now he's in law school as well. I just couldn't wrap my head around everything that this human being is involved in. And not only that, he's going to law school so that he can change legislation both here in the state of New Mexico and I suspect someday nationally. He is a fierce social justice warrior and he uses everything, his words, his art, his creative spirit, pretty much his entire being, he's using to make this world a better place for other people. I was just so excited that he said yes when I asked him for an interview. So now, without further ado, my interview with Hakeem Bellamy, Poet Laureate of Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Fast forward, now I'm at the hospital. My mom gets the call and I'm at the hospital. Before my mom arrives to the hospital, the triage nurse sets me up in the room now. They put something on the bleeding and they're kind of asking me questions before the police get there to take a formal, like get my statement. And she's leaving the room, a middle-aged white woman, and she turns around, her back, she's walking out. Her back stiffens up and she turns around and her eyes are different and her voice is different. And she walks back over to my bed and she looks at me and says, "You weren't supposed to go tonight. God has a plan for you." You know, this is without feeding the stereotype of, you know, kid grows up, young kid of color, young black kid grows up outside of a major metropolitan area and becomes a victim of gun violence. Like we know that story all too well. It's become somewhat of a stereotype, somewhat of a caricature of what it means to be a young black person of color in this country. But that's where I've seen God move, right? I've seen God move in mysterious ways. I've seen God in my own life, and insert for those of us listening out there, insert whatever higher power you do or don't believe in into God. I'm gonna use the word God because if my mom hears this, she's gonna be listening for that. But if you want to say universe or whatever you like to say, say it. But that subatomic space between quarks and atoms, that thing, right? That energy that gives life, right? But I've experienced it personally. I was working for a summer at a call center job in Pennsauken, New Jersey, just outside of Cherry Hill. For people from that area, you know that Cherry Hill is like the very affluent side of the tracks, and then right across Route 70 is Pennsauken, which is where, you know, me and my friends would hang out, and it's proximal to Camden and Philadelphia, which are the much more urban populated areas. But in a generation just post exceptional white flight from Philadelphia, kind of in the late 60s, early 70s, a lot of black families ended up in the burbs. First white families left and then black families followed them and then white families moved back into the city. But that turnover of population that was happening in the late 70s, early 80s gave you that dynamic where you could have a Cherry Hill right next to a Pennsauken. After work there, I was getting my hair braided by one of my coworkers, African-American woman, at the time much older than me. For those of us who have black hair, you know the process of getting your hair braided or cornrowed or locked or box braided is like a 3-hour process, whether you're doing it at a salon or in someone's home salon, which is the case for me. And you know, if you have a friend that can do it, you might save yourselves about $200 in the venture. And so she was hooking a brother up and her boyfriend came home. And I have no idea what was going on in their relationship prior to him walking in and seeing a man maybe 10 or 15 years younger than his wife on the floor getting his hair braided. But whatever the state of their relationship was prior to that, it didn't involve me until that night. And he went to the back of she lived in the trailer park and her roommate was there. And you heard tussling and what sounded like physical altercation.
I immediately was like putting things together. Like, if that's the boyfriend and now they're fighting in the back, maybe I'm the reason that they're fighting. I'm just going to go and get my things and get out of here. Let you guys finish. He came out with a weapon and he pointed it at me and accused me of all kinds of things, including sleeping with his girlfriend, which was not the case. Said he was going to kill me. And in that moment, something inside me said to say to him, no, you won't. He had already hit me at this point, at 7-8 stitches in the back of my head to show for it. So I'm bleeding from my head, gun butt, pistol whip, whatever the kids call it in rap videos these days, but bleeding from my head. And he says he's going to shoot me now, pointing it at me. And I'm in shock because I'm like, I'm bleeding from my head. I can see it now. See blood in my hands. And I said, no, you're not. And that wasn't me. I'm not that brave to tell this guy, no, you're not. Something else had to operate inside me to even, and that kind of startled him for a second. And then he, like, you know, had the wherewithal to say, well, do you have any money on you? And I'm like, if I had more money, I would have been doing this in a salon and not in your girlfriend's living room. But no, I don't. You can't have that either. And then, of course, by then, sirens, the roommate had called the cops. Sirens are coming. He takes off. Fast forward. Now I'm at the hospital. My mom gets the call and I'm at the hospital. Before my mom arrives to the hospital, the triage nurse sets me up in the room. Now they put something on the bleeding and they're kind of asking me questions before the police get there to take a formal, like, get my statement. And she's leaving the room, a middle-aged white woman, and she turns around, her back, she's walking out. Her back stiffens up and she turns around and her eyes are different and her voice is different. And she walks back over to my bed and she looks at me and says, you weren't supposed to go tonight. God has a plan for you. And I'm like, huh? And I kind of look at her and then she kind of looks at me and she's staring at me and she just blinks, walks out of that room. I never see this nurse ever again. My mom rushes in immediately after her. I'm trying to explain to her that the nurse just, like, that wasn't nurse talk. Before it was nurse talk. Now that was somebody else talking. And then shortly after that, the officers came in and there's no happy ending to that story. He had an unregistered weapon. He eventually did 5 years because in New Jersey, unregistered gun is automatic 5, federal 5. And I have no idea what either one of them are doing with their life anymore. But I ended up healing up and, you know, going off to college. I think I was home for my first year from college that summer. So I went back to school and here I am talking to you today. Right. And it could have been very different. So that's how I've seen magic work in my life. And I wouldn't have known it was magic in that moment had that nurse not kind of, like, she really drove the point home. And I try to tell my son, like, God doesn't necessarily speak in burning bushes anymore, kid, but you know when you are being talked to by someone or something that is not of this realm, and it would behoove you to listen in those moments. And I think I did after that, so.
I have to tell you, that is such an interesting story. And I got goosebumps while you were telling it, because I got interviewed for episode 100 by a very good friend. And I'd had two experiences in my life that completely were so disorienting and confusing for me. But then I discovered through a couple other people that there's a term called compassionate possession. And sometimes those spirits, God, those energies, sometimes they take people over and they relay a message that needs to be heard. And it sounds like that might be what happened with that nurse.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up in a Black church tradition. I think they usually talk about it in churches of God and Christ, even though my church, CCU, Christ Care Unit Missionary Baptist Church, was not a Kojic church. It was just a Southern Baptist church in the Northeast. But in the Black kind of like evangelical tradition, those of you who have been to Black churches know it's nothing for someone to be speaking in tongues, for their body to be taken over by the Holy Ghost in a church service. I mean, I think out in the world, in the more popular culture, it would be like a Ouija board or a seance where somebody is like a spirit has inhabited someone. But yeah, I witnessed that. It happens.
It's really astonishing because I didn't believe in it until it happened to me. And I think you really have to experience it, because I think it's really interesting that you looked at the nurse and you could tell from her eyes that like she wasn't there anymore, like something else was in there. And I've certainly had that experience a few times in my life. And it's a really powerful and fascinating experience, also a little scary. But I'm so grateful that your whole story is so powerful. And I think, you know, you're in this situation that I'm sure was beyond terrifying. Yet, you know, God showed up and gave you the strength and the bravery to get through it. And
very,
I'm so
very scary. Her whole posture changed, you know, and you know, I remember telling my mom, and we had a good laugh about it. You know, my mom is a believer. She's a woman of faith, but we had a good laugh because you got to have a sense of humor to be a person of faith, first of all. But if you don't have a sense of humor, you are not a person of faith. Let me just go there first. But we laugh about it because she oftentimes is like, I'm glad you got that message. And she was like, and it only took someone giving you 7 stitches in your head for you to get it because you hard headed. And but you got the message. And she's also like, but low key, though, you also kind of had a mild concussion. So maybe you were just seeing things. But whatever it was, it mattered and it changed me.
Those moments change us forever. I'm going to go with that. It wasn't the concussion that it actually happened. So
I mean, you can't tell me any different.
You can't
tell me any different.
Just this unbelievable human who does everything. I hope that our conversation allowed you to kind of understand just why I was so captivated by Hakeem and by the work he's doing in the world. To see more, or to read more, or to listen more to this human being's incredible creative mind and all of his projects, I'm going to have a link to his YouTube channel on the Treasures page of the website, and then a link to his website under the episode show notes. Please do yourself the biggest favor and jump into Hakeem's world and all the beauty that he's created. I'd also love to take this time to ask anyone who's listened, please consider writing a review or leaving a rating for the podcast. Those ratings and reviews help other people find us, and it's all part of the hustle of getting this podcast out into the world. I'm so very close to 3 years of doing this podcast, and it's so exciting. I had no idea I would even do 20 episodes, and now here we are at episode 125. Who knew? Thank you so much for listening, and I need to thank Hakeem for being such a gracious and intelligent guest, and then I need to thank the creators of the music used for this episode. Of course, Hakeem and his gorgeous poem at the beginning of the episode, but also Sasha End, Taiga Sound Productions, and Chilled Music. For complete attributions, please see the Bite Sized Blessings website at bitesizedblessings.com. On the website, you'll find links to books, music, art, and of course, Hakeem's incredible work, both under the episode's show notes and on the Treasures page of the website. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Hakeem. Channel whatever you can in your body, your mind, your heart. What can you do in this world to make it a more beautiful place, a more just place for those who don't have the same advantages that you do? Find out whatever that is, whether it's reciting poetry at your local cafe or volunteering at a food bank. What can you do to bring beauty to others? Think about it. Cogitate a little bit, and then put your plan in action. See you next week for the very next groovy episode, episode 126. And until then, I hope you have a week filled with magic and miracles and super cool strangers
who ultimately become your friends.